How are you doing today? I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. How are you today? I'm good. Thanks for asking. And I really am looking forward to today's program. But first, I want to let you know a few things that are going on. I may have mentioned this last week, but every year around this time, around Earth Day, which is April 22nd, next Wednesday, and it's also my birthday, on Earth Day, the organization Compassion Over Killing hosts the U.S. Veg Week, and this year, U.S. Veg Week 2015 will be going on between April 20th and 26th. You can go to usvegweek.com, and you can sign up and take a 7-day veg pledge. You'll get all kinds of free stuff, coupons for yummy food, and lots of great information. So if you need that kick in the butt to up your diet a notch or to finally take the plunge, take the pledge, and go over to usvegweek.com. And the other thing I wanted to mention, of course, as I mentioned Earth Day, my nonprofit, Responsible Eating and Living, is having our big fundraising event next week, and it's going to be a lot of fun. We've got the Swing Gourmets coming in with a great performance, and that's going to be in Queens, the number one travel destination for 2015, named by Lonely Planet. So if you haven't been here, you can swing on over. It's so easy to get here. The venue is right by the Long Island Railroad, by the subway. You can even fly in. The airports aren't that far away. Okay, so that's it for my brief announcements. And now I want to bring on my first guest, Jody Raich. And he's a consultant in areas of social investing and microfinance. And he's also on the board of a number of organizations, nonprofit organizations, Battery Dance Company, which conducts cultural diplomacy in over 60 countries and the United States through its Dancing to Connect program, and Veg Fund, which supports grassroots activists in promoting a vegan lifestyle. He's also a painter and is working on his first novel, The Day After Yesterday, which has an animal rights theme. Jody, welcome to It's All About Food.
Oh, thank you very much.
I love talking to Renaissance people.
People I'm not that,
do,
that old.
No. What I mean is, you know what I mean, but people who,
yes,
you know, do whatever their makes their hearts sing.
Yes, no, that's, I think, important. Helps also keep you sane.
Absolutely, and that's, like, probably the biggest challenge humans have here on this planet, staying sane, or at least working towards feeling good most of the time, because there's a lot that can bring us down.
Very true.
Yeah, so let's talk about something that's very important to many of us, and that's money. And you've been involved in social investing and microfinance. Can you just give me an idea of where social investing is at these days and what it is?
Yeah, well, defining what it is probably the more difficult of the questions, because there are a lot of different types of social investing that goes on. I mean, historically, what social investing has been is what they call negative screening, where you don't want your money invested in certain areas. So it started out more as a religious thing, where you didn't want to invest in sin stocks. And so that was really the first level. Mm. And then it went from being more religious to then having a social aspect to it. So you would have divestitures of companies that were in South Africa. You're seeing it now with a lot of the larger funds that are looking at divesting any of their holdings in carbon or in the oil and gas industry. So that's kind of the next stage of that. And then you have what we'll call impact investing, where you would invest your money to have a social impact. So rather than a negative screen, you try to invest your money in a way that's positive. So, for example, if you want to do something about greenhouse gases, rather than not investing in oil companies, you might invest in solar or in wind farms and other aspects that have a social aspect to it. And then the final area of social investing is really advocacy, where you would actually invest in a company that's doing something you don't like, so that you can actually have a seat at the table and potentially give shareholder resolutions to try to elevate the discussion and actually make change. So those are the different aspects of it. And depending on who you talk to and how narrowly you define social investing, there's potentially around $7 trillion that's been invested in total in impact investing. Some of it may be just negative screens and not necessarily very impactful, but that's kind of the realm of what we're looking at.
I remember when I first learned about social investing, it was about not supporting companies that were involved in tobacco or involved in the war machine.
Right. And there was also, they also looked at pornography, so it's a lot of the sin stocks as well they were looking at. So, yeah, the problem with that really was that it made the investor feel good, but it didn't actually change anything. The fact that you're not investing in Lockheed doesn't hurt their access to the capital markets, so they don't change. So it was really expensive for the investors because you'd have to have somebody screening and managing these investments for you. And you really weren't, you know, we didn't stop war when people stopped investing in war stocks and so on. So, you know, the efficacy of that type of investing is somewhat in question.
So I thought that the getting a seat at the table and investing and getting shares in a company that whose mission you don't support is something that I think is a really excellent idea. And I mean, I've heard some good things that have come out of it, and I imagine that's a more productive route.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I think that is, that can be very productive, and also doing positive investment, investing in companies that are doing something to promote change in whichever areas that you're looking at. So those things are more effective and seems to be where the social investment market is going.
Now, the thing about social investing, just like any investing, people want to put their money in and make money on it, right?
Right, absolutely.
I mean, nobody wants to lose money in their investment.
Yeah, that's important in social investing because it's not like giving for a not-for-profit where you're giving them money to accomplish a specific objective. If you're investing in a company, the way the company has impact is if they grow. So if you invest in a small company and it stays small, even if they're doing something good, then the impact you're having is not particularly large. If you invest in a solar company or wind company and they expand, well, that means that their product is expanding and you're having more and more impact. So the idea of getting a social return and a financial return are, in this case, not inconsistent.
Also, there are lots of great things that someone can invest in that are going to make a positive difference on the planet. And it may not be intuitive. You may think that these things are too expensive. But I think more and more, as energy becomes more expensive and more polluting, these more sustainable choices become more attractive, more affordable, and just a better idea.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So that's social investing. And then you're also involved in microfinance, which I've read a bit about over the decades, and it's really been a powerful thing to help a lot of individuals and small people all over the world that never had access to any kind of financial support to create.
Right. So the idea behind microfinance, and it's expanded since its early days, was actually microcredit, where you gave small loans to the poor to help them invest in their own businesses. That's now expanded quite significantly. Microcredit is part of it, but when you look at it, it's now more in a broader tent referred to as financial inclusion. And not everyone needs a loan, and for some people getting a loan is actually a bad thing because they have no real way to repay it. But there are other products that financial that we kind of take for granted. Well, actually, maybe we don't, because one of them is insurance, and there's very different types of insurance products that are for this market, And also another really big product that seems to have potentially even more impact on the poor is savings plans and getting people to save on a regular basis so that they have money for contingencies. And other types of programs that seem to have a very big impact on the poor is financial education. So institutions not only give financial products, but the question is, should they be doing other non-financial things? And other issues might be things like health programs and along those lines. But one thing that's always being vegan, that's always bothered me about microfinance and my involvement in that, is that a lot of these microfinance loans that go into rural areas are in many cases used to fund the purchase of animals, so sheep or ducks or cows.
I'm glad you brought that up because you just read my mind. That was my next question, and you just kept going with it. So please, yeah.
So that for me created a pretty big conflict. And I mean, I wasn't involved in the loan side. I was actually working for one of the big rating agencies, and what we developed was a way to rate microfinance institutions to how socially responsible they are. So we developed a rating system for that. But that really bothered me that, you know, these institutions, it was almost like you're solving one problem or trying to solve one problem, poverty, but creating a whole range of new problems on health and environment and all that, and trying to get institutions to pay attention to that. So what I got the idea, and I've had some success in this, is trying to work with some of these microfinance organizations to start doing what we're calling healthy microfinance, where in addition to making the loans, you talk to them about the health aspects of animal agriculture and eating animals and the environmental aspects, which, I mean, it's come to the fore in the U.S. where you look at the drought in California. And the reason they have a drought is because 47% of the water goes to support animal agriculture. You get a lot of that in the developing world, where, you know, you talk about desertification, and people will make arguments saying, well, on marginal lands you can only have animals grazing on it. But in fact, if you go back in history, the reason they became marginal lands is because of the grazing, and there are ways to rectify that. So that became, for my mind, something that I wanted to try to push. And it was interesting because one of the big microfinance institutions, which is Grameen, which was one of really the first that started in Bangladesh, they also have an initiative in the United States and actually in the Americas. And I had started talking to the person who headed up Grameen Americas about this concept. And he was very skeptical at first. About doing this, yes. But he had one of the people who worked for him start researching this. And we put them in touch with people from PCRM, Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, and others as well, about the benefits of a whole foods plant-based diet. And they started, and I bumped into the guy who headed this up about a year later. And it turns out, first of all, he turned vegan, which totally shocked me, and all the nutritional counseling that they were doing through this Grameen Health Initiative, they're calling it, was all plant-based because they just were convinced it was a better way to go. So, you know, that affects thousands of people, not only in the U.S., but also in, I think, Central America is also part of what they do. It just goes to the power of saying, you know, speaking up and actually saying these things for people. You never know where it's going to go.
That is really outstanding. I'm very excited to hear about that. Now, the question is how to get a broader reach with that. I was I attended a meeting last year with the president of IFAD, what does IFAD stand for? International Fund for they help rural people. And they invest in rural people. And the president was here in the United States, and a few of us met with him, and he was telling us about what they're working on and doing. And And I love the idea of investing in rural people and giving them what they need and helping them rather than just giving them donations, giving them the tools so that they can help themselves, because that's what people really want.
That's right.
And and then I asked him, kind of saying everything you just said, saying, you know, we have so much knowledge now about plant foods, what it's doing for the and growing animals to feed people, and what it's doing for the environment and our health, and, you know, what is it that you are promoting and encouraging? And, of course, they're doing what they shouldn't be doing, which is giving people animals and helping them raise chickens. And he didn't really have an answer for me when I asked him why he's doing it, because he doesn't know.
No, and that's one of the issues also. People, and I'm working with other groups that are looking into sustainable agriculture. And whenever they define sustainable agriculture, so much of the time it involves animals. And, you know, you just look at them and say, you know, let's not just call something sustainable. Let's look at the science behind it. And anything involving animals is not sustainable. And, you know, I think it's a good thing to reach out to these type of groups, because they're in their minds, they want to do good.
Absolutely.
But they just don't have the information. And that's, you mentioned that I'm on the board of Veg Fund. In addition to, you know, the grants, the grassroots activists and supporting people on the Facebook campaigns and all that, we're actually starting to do outreach in microfinance. We want to do outreach for some of the environmental conferences as well, to bring these issues up in those environments and see if we can, you know, start spreading the message of veganism from a health, environmental, and social aspect of it as well.
You know, I think what people don't even realize is helping these rural people and people in poverty to lift themselves up and get their families fed and going to school and improving their lives. It would, I'm assuming that it would be, if you're promoting a plant-based diet rather than animal agriculture in any form, you can have a much greater reach with plant foods. It's just cheaper to do, period.
That's
cheaper,
right.
And easier.
Yep. It's cheaper. It's more healthful. It supports the local environment. You have huge problems with groundwater pollution. So even if we, you know, you try to bring up global warming in when you're dealing in microfinance, they don't want to hear about it. I mean, they're just basically trying to survive and you know, get by the next day. But there's much more very local issues of land use, water use. You know, someone upstream, all their runoff is going into the water and polluting the water downstream. Well, most of that runoff is manure from, you know, the animals there. And so as water becomes more and more scarce, these issues become more and more important, and also are going to lead to things like, you know, violence and wars and all sorts of other issues related to that. So it's a very important issue, especially in the developing markets, for things that are particularly important to the local populations.
I remember the name of the organization I was talking about before, IFAD, the International Fund for Agricultural Development, and I believe they're part of the UN.
Yeah.
And they're doing a lot of great things, but again, they're doing it with animals a lot.
That's right. And, you know, a lot of the places you can actually open a dialogue with them. You have to be patient. You have to do it over time. But you can open up a dialogue to them, and it's interesting how open people are to this, and luckily people surprise you at times, and, you know, they get it, and you give them enough data and information from reputable sources. So, you know, for the United Nations, I mean, they actually did Livestock's Long Shadow. So if you provide that information to someone from the United Nations, they got to believe the source, because it's their own organization.
Very good. Excuse me. Let's talk a little bit more about Veg Fund. So what are some of the things that Veg Fund has been involved with?
Well, a lot of different projects, but, you know, at the core of what we do is give away money, which, you know, makes us very popular. So So we give money or we support grassroots activists. So, for example, if you want to do a food sampling in your locality, in your area, and need the money to, you know, buy the food, and if there are, you know, you're doing it in a place where there are fees or something like that, you can apply for a grant and we'll cover the costs. If you want to do a pay-per-view, which I found, my wife used to do them before I went on the board, so I guess she can't be recompensated by Veg Fund anymore, so I ruined that for her. Where you show little clips of a video about animal agriculture and you pay someone, typically it's $1 to watch it, so you're paying them to view it. And if you need money to do the dollar and do the payment, you can apply to Veg Fund for that. So if you want to arrange a movie screening, as long as it's a movie that you know, we feel is an appropriate movie for the message, the vegan message, and if you have costs involved in that, then you know you can apply to Veg Fund and we'll deal with that. We also have a number of Facebook campaigns where we'll pay people for the clicks through to get a vegetarian starter kit. And so, you know, we'll compensate somebody for the costs on a Facebook campaign or something like that. So you can go to the website, which is vegfund.org, and look at that. And then the part that I like the best with that is we also have this thing called our Merit Awards. And that can be for something that's different and innovative that isn't part of our normal programming, and you can apply for that, and we can kind of take a look at what you propose, and if it supports veganism and supports a cause, potentially it's something that we can fund. So we encourage people to be creative.
That's great. I got a very tiny Veg Fund award last year as a speaker when I went to talk to the 250 cattle ranchers about animal agriculture's impact on global warming, which was really fun.
And did we pay you so you could keep the car running on the way so you can get out quickly?
I didn't include that in my budget.
All right.
But I did. And actually, like we were saying before about talking to people about different issues, especially when you think that they won't be open to them, people really appreciate dialogue and information. And even talking to cattle ranchers about alternatives, they were asking questions. They were open. They were interested.
Yeah, yeah. And where was it? I think it was in Finland where they actually paid cattle ranchers to switch to growing berries, and they found heart disease rates went way down.
Right.
And it was also made money for this. So, you know, there is, if it's put the right way, there can be common ground.
Well, we've got this drought going on in California, and there's all kinds of conversation about the reason behind it. But I really wish that our government was able to rise above all of the nonsense and do the right thing. And one of the right things would be to support people that are in businesses that are not environmentally friendly. So people that are raising cattle out in Nevada and think there's nothing else that they can do with that land that doesn't seem to want to grow anything should be learning how to grow drought-tolerant crops and things that can help put the soil back into health, things like teff and other plants like that. We need we need some support there. Okay. Yeah. Now, we just have a few more minutes left, and I wanted to talk about your art. Is that okay?
Okay.
Great.
That's perfectly okay.
Well, I really believe that art is important in life for so many reasons. I myself am a singer, a performer, and when I do get a chance, I like to dabble in watercolors and oil. And I just think it's important for each of us individually to express and create. And I would like to see a lot more support behind the arts these days. It's exceptionally frustrating. But there's just so much power in art. So I'm looking at your website. I don't know how you pronounce it, but It's Rash Art.
Rash Art.
Your name is Rash.
Rash Art.
I didn't pronounce it.
R-A-S. Yeah. R-A-S-C-H.
RashArt.com. Right.
Right.
And I was really enjoying looking at your work. And under the astronomy section, I'm looking at the first piece that is Four Seasons of Dark Matter. And
right.
I'm like seeing like a little Van Gogh in there, you know, Starry, Starry Night. But it's what I love is you look at the macro scale, with the astronomy, the big universe, and then the micro scale under biology, and everything can be fascinating and beautiful.
Yeah, and you know, the idea behind that, and it's for me, what's interesting about it is that whether it's on the macro scale and you're looking at radio astronomy images so that they don't actually appear to be like stars or something like that. It's more abstract images, or the biology, or the subatomic physics that I use as themes in all the art. These are things that really make up the world, but we don't actually see. And there's actually a common bond between that and my outlook on life, particularly the veganism. It's if you think about the animals involved in our food supply, most people just never see that. So they never go beyond what's just right in front of their eyes. And what I want people to do, and what I challenge them to do in my art, is to look beyond just the surface to see what's really the world is made of and what really happens. So, for example, in the biology, one of the things that I do quite a bit of is the different viruses. So there's like an HIV virus, there's bubonic plague is one of the images that I've used. And, you know, they look quite beautiful in their microscopic levels. But then when you think about what their impact is on the world, the just the difference between those two, is the duality of it, is really trying to get you to think about, you know, how things really are and what the impact really of our decisions are on the macro world. So there's kind of a common theme, and I started the painting because it helped me think about these type of issues, helped me just go beyond what you're seeing and kind of telling you to think more deeply about these type of factors.
Mm-hmm. I just want to tell you my favorite of what you've got on your website is the synapse, neuromuscular synapse.
I love the color,
the balance. I think that's my favorite. My favorite today.
All right.
Could change at any time. And I just want to mention one more thing before we go. But, I went through a little romp with advanced ovarian cancer 8.5 years ago. And I had this Gustav Klimt connection in my cancer story. It's a long story. I'm not going to go into it here. But I had some PET scans during this period, and it would light up where this little mass was. And we kept thinking, Gary, who you met, my partner, and I, how that little mass in the PET scan looked a lot like the images in one of my favorite Klimt paintings. And, you know, there's
maybe there's an art series in this one as well. We should talk.
Okay, let's do that. Great. Well, Jody, thanks for joining me on It's All About Food and for everything that you're doing. It's so important. Thank you.
And thank you as well.
Okay, take care, and we'll talk soon.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Let's take a really quick break, and then we're going to be back with Jane Velez Mitchell. I can't wait. Everybody, I'm Karen Hartglass, and we're back for the second part of It's All About Food. Whew. You know what? I just wanted to mention something. Do you like the music that I play at the beginning of the program and during the break and at the end? I just have to mention that it was composed and played by my brother, Barry Hartglass, who's an awesome musician. I don't get to mention him very often. He's at barryhartglass.com. But I just wanted to bring it up because He's going to be one of the musicians who's accompanying us next week at our Responsible Eating and Living fundraiser, the Happy Earth Day Review, which is on Earth Day. And I'm very happy about that. So for more information on that, just go to responsibleeatingandliving.com. And you can always email me about just about anything at info@realmeals.org. Very good. Now let's get to the really exciting part. Jane Velez Mitchell, are you there?
I am. How are you, my dear?
Good. Very good. You know, I normally read bios, but, you know, you're just bigger than big, and I just want to talk about the news and the good stuff and everything. But anyway, for those of you who don't know this amazing individual, she's the editor of a new website, JaneUnchained.com. We're going to be talking a lot about that. She's won 4 Genesis Awards from the Humane Society. She's an author. She had her own program on CNN, Headline News, and just a powerhouse. So thank you for being on this planet, Jane.
Well, thank you for being on this planet.
Okay. Well, you know, we really didn't have much say about it when it happened, did we?
That's true. That's true.
Yes.
But other people do have a choice as to whether they're going to have children or how many children they have. You know, we're going to hit 2050. By 2050, we're going to have 9 billion people on this planet. And the Earth just can't sustain that much more. So I like to say there are so many kids out there who need good homes, who need to be adopted. And think about that as an option if, you know, you want kids. There are children out there who have no homes, and our world can only sustain so many people.
Yeah, you know, this show is called It's All About Food, and we talk about veganism, plant-based diets, the environment, and the treatment of animals and everything connected to food. But, you know, it really is related to the population of humans on this planet, because if we had 50 or 100 or, you know, a million people on the planet, we wouldn't be experiencing the stuff that's going on today.
More people have been born since 1950 than existed in the entire history of the world up to 1950.
Yes. Well, I'm doing my part.
I think you're absolutely right, and let's talk about food. I want to talk about
what I meant is, I chose long ago that I didn't want to have children, and you know, I love kids, and I love my nieces and nephews, and all my friends' kids. But I mean, it's just a piece of it is deciding how many children to have or not have. It's important.
Yeah. And you know, all these shows that 19 and counting, the Duggars that encourage this sort of self-indulgence when it comes to having many, many children. I just think it's so unfortunate. Again, there are so many kids who need homes. And, you know, while we're talking about population and food, we could solve world hunger today. And as we're talking, there are kids dying of malnutrition all around the world. And we could feed all those kids very easily if, for example, Americans stopped eating meat and took the 9 billion animals that we raise and slaughter for food every year and stopped that production and the insemination of those animals and the breeding of those animals and took the food that those animals eat and distributed it equitably around the world, we would end world hunger today. So when people say to me, well, oh, why are you so worried about animals and getting people to eat plants and, you know, don't you have something more important to talk about? What's more important than world hunger? And while we're talking about the resources that these animals use, we've got this massive drought in California, and I find it amazing that the news media, which is really so biased on this issue, when they talk about the water the farmers use, they go to almonds.
No, I know. It's
the meat and dairy companies that are using all the water.
You know, I haven't done the math, but I'm tempted. I really want to do the math. But, you know, how much money is really going into almond production and water? It can't even be the tip of the iceberg going into the plants that are grown to feed animals to feed those cows and the alfalfa that we're growing to export to China.
Of course it isn't. But here's the point. You're not going to get any mainstream media to talk about that. Look at the advertisers.
Yeah.
The advertisers are connected to the meat and dairy industry, so you can't even say that. You say the word vegan on mainstream TV, they shut you right down.
Now, just you were on CNN for a while, and
I'm just talking about media in general. I was just on an unnamed show today on television, and I started talking about veganism because it came up. We were talking about Hillary Clinton going to Chipotle, and somebody said, a very fun host is a friend of mine. He goes, yeah, well, she's doing what everybody does, eating fast food, trying to be a populist. And I said, not everybody eats fast food. I don't eat fast food. And then somehow we ended up talking about veganism, and he said right out, he goes, don't talk about that. The people here on the show who eat meat don't like that. They don't like it. People don't want to be confronted about their behavior.
Yep.
They don't want to have to look at it. And if they're in the, if they have the power, if they have the power to say, don't talk about it, that's what they're going to do. So the way that things change is with a new generation. And that's why I've jumped to the internet, and I'm doing social media where I'm shooting tons of protests, animal rights protests, and going to the veggie festivals, the New York City Vegetarian Food Festival, which had 8,000 people. No coverage. No coverage.
No coverage. I know. Yep. No coverage. Yep.
Yeah, so we have to become the media for animals. This is the point that I've been trying to make over and over again with everyone. So to all our listeners, if you care about the animals, it's up to you to spread the message. Nobody else will do it but you. And that's the same thing when it comes to animal activism in general. You're upset about something? Just do something about it, because there's nobody else who's going to be able to do it. All the animal welfare organizations and the animal rights organizations are stretched thin. They get hundreds of calls every day with people saying, do this, do that.
Mm-hmm.
How do I know that? I get hundreds of emails every week that they're killing the cormorants. They're kidnapping elephants in Zimbabwe. They're taking the wild horses and running them off the land. They're, you know, it's one thing after another, every day, dozens and dozens of things. If you're upset about it, you do something about it, just like I'm doing something about it. Because the idea that somebody else is going to do this, it's just not true.
Yep. Yeah, that's it. Just do something. Each one of us has to do something. And for everybody that's listening, number one, thank you for listening. But now you've got to go and do whatever it is you can do. And we can't
for one, you can... Yeah, you can share videos. There are many, many animal rights videos that pop up all the time. I'm shooting them. Go to JaneUnchained.com and share my videos. Go to my Facebook page, Facebook.com/JaneVelezMitchell, and start sharing the videos. Go to Mercy for Animals and start sharing their videos. Go to PETA and start sharing their videos. Become the media for animals. That's number one. Anybody who says, oh, I can't do this, I don't have time. It doesn't take any time at all to hit a button that says share.
Mm-hmm.
It really doesn't take that much time. Facebook is an incredible medium. Twitter is an incredible medium. You can get the message out there, but you've got to be part of the process.
Yes, yeah, so the message is share, share, share. Like, click, share. Takes no time at all. And it makes a big difference. Whew. Now, it's important to get to the young people, the next generation, and I really have a lot of faith in them getting this message because, I mean, we do so much exploitation on so many levels, exploitation of people, of non-human animals, of the planet, and I believe that the younger generations are more sensitive to all of it. So I'm hoping that that's going to change. But the other big piece of it is money. And, you know, you said that the shows that you've been on, the advertisers don't want to hear this information. Now,
I'm not talking about the shows I've been on. I'm talking about in general. All you have to do is, you know, turn on any TV show.
I know.
Anywhere.
Yeah. Anywhere.
And you just look at the advertisers are mostly meat and dairy companies. So they're not going to want people talking about factory farming, the hideous things. See, once you open the door, the Pandora's box of animal rights, and you start saying, look, you know, what's happening to Lolita down at the Seaquarium, what's happening to Tilikum and the other, you know, orcas at SeaWorld, what has happened to them, that opens the door, because once people start caring about one orca, all of a sudden their minds start doing calculations and they start realizing, wait a second, if I care about this one orca, how can I sit here and eat a hamburger? Because that's another animal. And people want to remain in a state of denial about that. Once they start, once you open that Pandora's box, you're on the journey. There is no turning back. You may be on a slow train. You may be on a fast train. But you've had the light bulb go off in some way, shape, or form. And that's what, you know, is really what's going to happen in terms of evolution, of us evolving as a species beyond killing. When we're incapable of having factory farms and people are eating a plant-based diet, we will have evolved beyond war. We will have evolved beyond all sorts of violence. So, I mean, this is really a litmus test for evolution of our human species. And it's probably, no, it's not probably, it's undoubtedly the most important issue facing the world today. Ironically, when you talk to people about this issue, they scoff and they laugh at you and they say, you know, get a life, because mm-hmm. they can't make those connections. But once the light bulb goes off, then they go, aha, it's like everything else in life, gravity. You know, until that apple hit the ground, people, and then all of a sudden, oh, gravity. Well, that makes sense. That's obvious.
Yeah, and when Newton was talking about gravity, they all said he was a nut, right?
Right. And, you know, there's a good old song. They all laughed at Christopher
yes.
Columbus when he said the world was round.
You know,
yeah, so we're a little ahead of the herd. And, you know, we're doing this really important work, and I applaud you for talking about this. And, you know, we've really just got to let people know that we're in crisis right now, and that it doesn't mean we have to walk around being depressed or just talk amongst ourselves. I don't like to sit around and talk to other animal rights activists mm-hmm. about what's happening. We've just either a plan for action or talk to somebody who doesn't get it yet, because that's wasted energy. I mean, I'm talking to you about it. You're an animal activist and obviously a proponent of a plant-based diet, and so am I. We're talking to each other because other people are listening. Otherwise, you and I should be talking about what's the next demo we're going to, what's the next food demonstration. We have to be talking about spreading the message.
Yes, or we could talk about what's the next wonderful new vegan restaurant that's showing up.
Yeah, those trends are
no, I mean, just you and me, not for our listeners. Just saying, if we were going to be not, anyway, that's like a fun thing that we can do when we're just socializing with our own kind, just rejoicing about the access to wonderful, delicious food that's popping up everywhere. Yes, but
yeah,
I have a lot of listeners that are not vegan. And many of them have written to me and say they want to move in that direction, and they struggle on so many levels. I've been doing it for over 26 years. I can't see doing it any other way. It's not hard for me, but I mean, my heart goes out there for people that are challenged by it for whatever reasons. But I want to say it really isn't hard if you.
It's so easy. And it's so much fun. I mean, who wants to sit there eating the same thing over and over again? Let's have a challenge. Today, okay, I did this early morning hit on a station, and I came back, and I stopped at a grocery store. I felt the urge for noodles. So I got some Chinese noodles, making sure that they didn't have any egg in them.
Mm-hmm.
And I put those in a pot with cauliflower and broccoli and tofu. I added some Bragg's Amino, which is like a soy sauce but lighter sodium, and some nutritional yeast, and I added a vegetarian bouillon cube, low sodium, and I put that all together with some water, and it was the most delicious soup. And it was kind of rainy here today, so I'm in New York. It was the perfect lunch, and that was a delicious lunch that I had. And then later, I still was hungry, even though that was a nice big soup. And later, after a couple of hours, because I did get up at like 6 a.m., so that was a weird breakfast, but I had been up since 6, so I had that at about 11. And then later I had a really great. It wasn't Ezekiel bread, but it was very similar. It was all grains and
sprouted
nice
grains,
crunchy, yeah, sprouted toast with some organic peanut butter and some sugar-free jam that is just really good, you know, natural jam. And that was another delicious lunch right there. And, you know,
and easy.
It's not difficult. And I'm not a cook. I mean, it's not like I'm a gourmet chef or anything, but I whip things up all the time. I use coconut oil and, canola oil and olive oil and garlic and Bragg's aminos and nutritional yeast. And remember, 90% of the things are, it's the sauces you put on them, you know, that give them the flavor. They did a taste test with the Today Show where I was here watching it at home, or probably watching it on the computer. I don't remember, but I don't watch the Today Show. I don't watch any television. I watch everything on the computer. So I saw this on the computer. And they did a taste test. They brought in Beyond Meat chicken version, and they made some real chicken. And they asked the stars of the show, tell us which is the real chicken and which is the Beyond Meat. And they got it wrong.
Right.
They picked the wrong one. So if you can't tell the difference, why kill an animal? You know, I remember this woman, this very sort of sophisticated woman. I was in L.A. We were at some kind of a meeting, and I had brought something as food, and I brought some soy bologna. So I was trying to, you know, bring something that might be palatable. And the woman was going for it, and I said, oh, that's soy bologna. And then she stopped herself and she goes,
ew.
Ooh, I don't know if I can go there. And, you know, I didn't want to be rude, but I thought, wait, you can rip an animal away from his mother. You can stick him in a crate. You can have the grieving mother chasing after the cow and beaten away. You can stick animals in crates, never allowing them to turn around. You can drive them to the slaughterhouse. You can slit their throat in terror, you know, as they defecate on themselves and everything else. You can take the veins out of them and the eyeballs out of them and hang them upside down. And well, of course, she didn't have to do any of that, right, because she's ordering the hit. She's not carrying it out. But you know what they say in crime? And my whole thing on JaneUnchained.com is to treat crimes against animals, whether they're legal or not, moral crimes against animals, as crimes. I've found myself in the crime genre, and I can't even tell you how I got there, but somehow I ended up in the crime genre. And my whole thing is crimes against animals should be treated just like crimes against people. So you know that when it comes to crimes against people, if you order a hit, you are also culpable of murder. You don't have to pull the trigger yourself. And
I never heard that before. I love it. If you order a hit,
true.
That's brilliant.
Well, if you're involved in a carjacking and you didn't necessarily shoot the person, but you were involved in that carjacking, you're as guilty as the person who shot the driver.
That's right, guilty.
Right,
guilty.
Or a bank robbery, any of these kinds of crimes. Well, so it's the same concept. You don't have to go there and slit the animal's throat to be responsible for the torture and the death of that animal. And remember, we're talking about 9 billion farm animals raised in horrific factory farm conditions and slaughtered every year.
It's a number that nobody
do
can
do not trump moral responsibility. Okay? I would like to eat chocolate all day long. I love chocolate. I'm a chocoholic. You know, I don't. I would love to eat nothing, but when I was a little kid, I thought of it, because my parents were macrobiotic, you know, for a while. They went through that phase. I thought, when I grow up, I'm going to have ice cream and snow cones and chocolate all day long. That's all I'm going to eat. You know, but taste buds don't trump everything. You know, I don't want to go into sugar shock and get diabetes and become obese, so I constrain myself. The people who say, oh, you know, don't tell me what I should do, don't restrict my right as an American, I don't personally believe that your right extends to killing another sentient being.
Yep, amen. That's right. I'm talking to Jane Velez Mitchell, and you are probably the biggest or the most famous animal rights journalist reporter we have on the planet. Is that true?
Oh, I don't know about
There's
that.
There's nobody
I
else
am
but
just,
you.
No. I mean, there are so many Wonderful people. I had the opportunity to ride in a car for 8 hours. What was supposed to be a 5-hour trip turned into 8 hours with Ingrid Newkirk a couple of days ago, who's the president
of
PETA.
Okay, but she's not a reporter or a journalist. She runs a nonprofit organization.
She does, but you want to talk about heroes. You want to talk about inspiring people.
No, I want to talk about journalists like you that are really telling it like it is, like so many don't.
Well,
that's all.
Look,
so I'm just applauding you. Yay, Jane.
Thank you. That's sweet of you. But I don't want the exclusive on this story. I would love nothing more to have everybody else reporting it to the point where I wouldn't need to report it.
Oh, of course. But
it's
let me ask you a question.
It's an abdication of responsibility that these journalists don't report on these stories. I just want to say this. When I started Jane Unchained, on a fluke, because basically my girlfriend had given me a GoPro camera for my birthday. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, when I was free to do whatever I wanted to, I had a nice run on a show. It ended, and I came home. And I was like, well, what am I going to do now? And I thought, look, we have a GoPro. I hadn't even used it. We used it once just to go bike riding. And I knew that there was a protest. I said, let's go cover the protest. This is how it started. Well, we get there. There's no other journalist there. It's a great protest.
Wow.
I forget what it was. I just started, and my girlfriend and I, she's really savvy on social media and editing and everything else, and she's taught me to edit. But anyway, we just started going to these protests. Not one protest that we went to was there another, maybe one or two of the, I don't know, 40, 50 protests we've gone to now.
Wow.
Some of them, I mean, when we covered the Lolita protest, that was covered because that was a big deal. When we're covering the monkey issue down in Southwest Florida, and please go to Jane Unchained and get involved with Monkeygate down there. They're trying to turn Southwest Florida into the lab monkey breeding capital of America, and they've been secretly, Hendry County commissioners have secretly been improving these facilities without telling the public, and now the public knows, and they're outraged, and they're trying to do everything they can to stop it. So please get involved. Read the stories on JaneUnchained.com. Write to the Hendry County commissioners. Tell them how you feel as an American, that you don't want this to happen, and do whatever you can. Share the videos. Call everybody you know who lives in the Fort Myers, Naples area. Get people involved. Fly down there. I'm flying down on Monday. It's my third trip down there. You know, it gets down to if you want something done, do it yourself.
That's right.
You know, people love to sit around and chat over cocktails about the terrible state of the environment and animals. And this is what needs to be done, and this is what needs to be done. And what I tell people is just do it. No one else.
Wow. Well, that's a great way to end, because we're at the end, and I know you could talk about all kinds of important things all day long, and you do. Thank you for joining me on It's All About Food, Jane Velez Mitchell, with your video for The Voiceless, JaneUnchained.com. Go there, get inspired, and do stuff. Thank you,
Jane. I love you. Keep it up.
Love you. Okay. Stay fueled and inspired. Bye.
Bye. Okay.
Bye. Wow, that was great. Jane Velez Mitchell, go to JaneUnchained.com. We have a minute left, and I wanted to remind you again about ResponsibilityAndLiving.com. Our upcoming fundraiser is on Earth Day, which is my birthday, Wednesday, April 22nd. You can still get tickets if you're in the New York metro area. It's really easy to get to, and I want to see you there. Okay? And meanwhile, you can also go to Responsibility and Living because there's a lot of great things going on. I've got my What Vegans Eat blog, and there are links to wonderful recipes when you go there. Jane was mentioning the importance of sauces and how they make the difference in making food taste good, and that's why we started the Transition Kitchen, and we started with the traditional French mother sauces that we are veganizing, showing you how easy they are to make, and they're the foundation sauces to make everything taste delicious. So you can go to our video button and check out the Transition Kitchen, and we've got more of those coming really soon. Thanks for joining me on It's All About Food, everybody. Send me an email at info@realmeals.org, and have a delicious week, okay?